Eastern Palliative Care is a not-for-profit service which offers a full range of support programs with the aim of improving the quality of life of individuals and families of those suffering life-limiting or terminal illnesses. Yes, Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show. And today with me, I've got volunteer Steve. How are you today, Steve?
Oh, I'm very well. Thanks, Greg.
That's good. Now, you're volunteering in a rather fairly intense area of what EPC offer people, and that is doing biographies.
Yes, I am, yeah.
Now, doing biographies, what sort of background, what made you think of doing that when you wanted to volunteer?
I was a couple of years ago, probably goes back to 2016, I think, I was contemplating retirement and wondering what on earth I was going to do to stay out of my wife's way in retirement. And I heard Crystal Wallace, who's the volunteer coordinator at EPC, on the John Fain radio show. And she was talking about biography and the service it provides. And I thought, that's exactly what I want to do when I retire. So that's what led me there. And I went through the training and I've been doing biographies since.
Yes, because if you ever do want to volunteer, any listener out there wants to volunteer for something, there is just thousands of things you could do with all sorts of groups who are local and offering good services. So, yeah, personally, I'm glad you chose that with EPC. And you mentioned the training. Was that fairly intensive or easy to get through or what?
Yeah, it was fairly intensive. I can't remember now. It was four or five years ago. But I think at the time we went through about 6 or 8 weeks of training, half a day a week, and it covered all of the bases that, you know, in order to prepare this new bunch of biographers for what we were to expect when we started going out and working with clients. It was hard work, but it was a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, well, it is good to hear that groups like EPC do provide decent training, because it's a relatively specialist sort of field, and one that requires not just technical skills but people skills as well, and how to deal with people in palliative care is something really that isn't just inbuilt. You can learn a bit, especially as you're on the job, so to speak, but you do need a certain type of temperament to do that sort of stuff. Did you find it easy when you started?
Yeah, I did. Well, easy. It seemed to come reasonably naturally to me. I was quite concerned, I guess, sort of going out on my first biography. I did a lot of preparation, preparing questions and things, and my biggest fear was that I wasn't going to connect with the person and they weren't going to have anything to say. But I needn't have worried. I don't think any of the clients that I've worked with, that's been a problem with. We usually connect reasonably well, and they usually have a very clear idea of what they want to talk about in their biography, so prompting them has never been an issue that has been necessary. So it's been a lot easier, I guess, than I imagined after the training it was going to be.
Yes, we have another show weekly here called Listen to Older Voices, where someone interviews older people and gets them to talk about their life. I imagine it would be a bit like that, sort of face-to-face chats and you taking down notes.
Yeah, well, I usually sit there with a tape recorder and record them as they speak.
We were talking about you writing people's biographies for Eastern Palliative Care, and you were just starting to mention to me that you asked them, who do you want to have this story written for? What do you mean by that?
Well, yeah, it's useful, I think, to frame the story that they're writing, to have in mind who they're writing the story for. It might be for anyone that wants to read, or it might be for their grandchildren, or it might be for their children, or somebody else entirely. And the message that they're trying to get across, I guess, will be tailored to that audience. So that's generally the first question I ask before we get going. Yeah.
How long does it take for them to sort of warm up to this idea and really start to open up?
Well, that's what's been surprising for me since I started, is that generally it takes no time at all for them to warm up to the task. So we go through the process of asking those couple of questions, and then before you know it, sometimes even before we've asked the questions, they're often talking. And, often I haven't even turned the tape recorder on at that point, so I'm going to say, stop, remember that thought while I turn it on, and we'll start again.
And as you go, do you come in with just a few questions, and then as the discussion goes on, it brings up more things for you to talk about?
Yeah. Usually I come in with I've got a standard little set of questions, just as prompters if that's necessary. But I've found in very, very few circumstances it's been necessary. Usually they've got a very clear idea of what they want to say, and they just start, and it goes on from there. The only real input I have to that conversation often is just to sort of seek clarity on a particular point or whatever along the way, just so that I know when I come to transcribing the interview that I understand what they're talking about.
Yes, and considering that quite a few of these clients will be older, they've lived through things that were possibly before our time, big momentous times in history. Do they tend to touch on those or just keep it more personal?
Oh, no, it varies from client to client. They all have a different sort of take on what they want to do. I had one client who it was a gentleman. He'd grown up in a city, sort of working class suburb, and what he really wanted to do was write something for his grandchildren and describe for them his lifestyle when he was a kid, the same age as they are, and how the technologies were different and so forth. So it was a really interesting biography, this one. He talked about everything from the use of ice boxes instead of refrigerators, and the horse-drawn cart that used to bring the ice box each week, and they had to go out and buy them.
I still remember that.
It's a little bit beyond me. I don't remember the ice cart coming around, but certainly he also talked about the night cart, and I do remember that.
Yeah.
Everything from that through to, using the mangle to wring out the washing and all of those sorts of things. It was fantastic. And after each of those sessions, I'd go home and Google many of these things, and I could get photos of them and so forth to illustrate the biography. And it was just a terrific biography.
This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show. I'm talking to Steve, who is a volunteer biographer with EPC. And Steve, I just want to get into some of the sort of logistics of how you go about it. You're sitting down in the room with them, you've got your tape deck on, recording what they say, and they're telling you their story. Now, do you have some sort of issues, like other members of the family or whatever want to come in and sort of put their side of the story, or how do you deal with that sort of thing that happens?
For me, anyway, I always take the view that it's the biography belongs to the client themselves and not anyone else around the room. But you play it by ear in the circumstances that exist in each place. So if there's a carer who hangs around in the room and wants to sit next to the client, then that's fine. If they interrupt too much, I might, you might try and redirect the conversation back to the client, because it is, after all, their story.
Yeah.
But I've very rarely had anyone else who's been terribly interventionist in the process. So I haven't really had an issue where I've had to do that. I had one lovely old gentleman whose wife would always go off into other rooms, clearly doing housework or something, but she was obviously listening very closely, because every now and then she'd shout from the other room to correct him. And she was always right, of course.
Of course. So once you've done your visits and your recording, how do you then do the process of editing and transcribing off the tape, and what do you choose to keep and not keep?
Yeah. I'm sure everyone does it in a different way, but I come home after each visit, and or during COVID times, after each Zoom call. But I come home and I'll spend the next couple of days just transcribing the tape recording word for word, as much as possible. I then bounce that transcription back against the client at our next meeting, so that they can have a look at it and correct anything that they said that they didn't, they might not have wanted to say, or that they have since realised was incorrect or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then at the end of sort of six or seven visits or whatever, you've got all of these transcripts, and the process then is to really sit down and first you've got to determine when is the time to do this, you know, when has the story actually been told, and then sit down and work out how to put all these different bits together and iron out any duplication that happens to be between the various transcripts and put them into a single whole, and then just edit that, trying to not interfere with the client's voice and the way that they express themselves in that editing process.
Yeah.
So that as clearly as possible, it's still them that's just telling the story. All I'm doing is just massaging it into a form that makes it accessible to the readers.
Now, do you come across things where they might want to include, say, a letter from the past or poem they've written or prose or something into the story?
Yes, once or twice, yes. Yeah. So we can bring other things in and read, you know, if they've got a letter or something or a favourite quote or whatever, we incorporate that into the biography if that's what they would like to do. And similarly with photos, we'll put in, I love to use photos because I think a picture tells 1,000 words, but so we bring in as any photos that he uses, well, just to bring the written word to life.
What about word limit? Because, you know, your different clients, some of them will be very wordy and some will have lots to say and others will be a bit more reticent. Do you have a sort of word limit in place in your mind, you know, that you're getting too wordy, this is too much information? Or?
No, I personally, I don't have any sort of limits in my mind. The guideline that picked up in training, and I think it's turned out to be pretty right in practice, is that usually it's about 6 or 7 one-hour sessions.
Yeah.
Is enough to get the full story out ready for writing up the biography. So that's more the guideline that I use rather than a word limit or anything like that. But I guess I've had clients. One client, I only met with her once because she died very shortly afterwards, and so basically she had a 2 or 3 three-page biography. But other clients I've had 60, 70, 80 pages come out of those 6 or 7 sessions.
That's fantastic. Steve, you're saying you've been doing this for 4 or 5 years now. During that time, of course, you would have been sitting with people face-to-face getting their stories. But nowadays, with the COVID restrictions in, you can't do that. So how much has your role changed?
The role itself, Greg, has not changed particularly much. It's really just the way we can fulfil that role. So obviously we're no longer allowed to go out and sit with the client in their home. Now I use mostly Zoom now to talk with the clients. Everything else is the same. I sit there with the tape recorder on, recording the sound that's coming out of my computer. And I was a little bit concerned when we needed to make that change that we'd lose that sort of close personal contact with the client, but that doesn't seem to have been the case. Seems quite amazing. You can almost feel like you're in the room with them at the same time. I was actually doing working with a client at the time that the restrictions came in, so I did half of the sessions face to face with him, and then half the sessions or the remaining sessions on Zoom.
Yeah,
and I found having established contact with, you know, in the first place on a face-to-face basis, I felt like I'd lost a fair bit of that connection for the remainder in visits. But for the one that I'm doing at the moment, that where I started during the restrictions on Zoom, I felt that it's been a pretty good experience.
We're sort of under the same restrictions here. Like, I'm talking to you via phone rather than having you in the studio. We do a lot of group chats with Zoom here on radio so that we then grab the audio, of course, to go to air, but we can see the people. And that's a big advantage, actually, when you are talking to people. How do the clients get their story when it's done, when they've finished giving it to you verbally and then you transcribe it and then you edit it all? How do they actually get it?
Okay, yeah. So once we've gone through that process, we go turn it into the biography, and there's a bit of toing and froing between the client and ourselves where they have an opportunity to make further changes and the like. And then once we're all satisfied, through EPC, the coordinator will generally find someone to proofread it for us, just so there's a fresh set of eyes to make sure that they pick up any typos and the like, and then it's published, if you like. So we generally print a couple of copies and bind those together so that they get a hard copy, but they also get the document on a memory stick, so that they've got it electronically and they can do what they would like to do with it from there.
Excellent. Yeah, it's always good to have an actual physical copy as well, you know, just to be able to sit down and pass around between people. What do you do with simple choices in publishing something, like how do you title the biography, you know, on the cover of the book that's in the end? Do you talk about that with the client, or is it sort of a generic, this is the story of Joe Bloggs?
Generally, they'll we'll talk about it. It's their biography, not mine, so we'll generally talk about it. Most often, they don't really have a view on it, so I'll make something up. Sometimes it can be very simple, just like their name, and if they're writing for someone in particular, then we might even mention that in the title.
Yeah.
I had one gentleman who's had many strings to his bow, but one of them was that he was a very good truck mechanic, but he was also competed in the stall gift a number of times when he was younger.
Yeah.
And I think I dreamt up some sort of a strange title saying he was the fastest truck whisperer in the East or something like that. He thought that was hilarious, so we went with that.
That's good. One last question. After the whole process of dealing with the client and getting this story, and then, as will happen sooner or later, they pass away, how do you go about debriefing? Because you've been put into a rather emotional process, and that all affects us in different ways, but EPC do look after their volunteers. What sort of system is in place for you then?
We've got fantastic volunteer coordinators at EPC who are very supportive, and they understand that process for us. So generally when the client dies, they hear about it first and they ring me up, and so we can have a bit of a chat about it and the like. I'm generally not that, I'm a bit of a hard-hearted person. I don't feel those emotions particularly strongly, but it's always sad, because you do generate a personal connection with your with them. And I've actually, back in the days before COVID, went along to a few of the funerals, and that's often a really uplifting experience. You can see all of the people that have been in their life and see how they're all celebrating their life at the end, and that's often a good way to deal with those emotions that come through.
That was the last question, but when I got you on air at the start of the show, asked you how you got into biography, and I thought maybe you would have been an author in the past or something, you know, some sort of background with writing, and you have in one sense, but how much of that do you rely on? Like, do people who have never written or been authors, would they also suit being a biographer with EPC?
Look, I think it helps to know how to compose a document to some extent. I mean, my background is I've worked in government, and I've worked as a consultant, so it's mostly been sort of business report writing sort of stuff that I've practiced throughout my life. So that's nothing like a biography, obviously.
Yep.
But the essential skills in being able to compose documents, you know, whether it's writing a letter or writing a business report or doing whatever, I think they all translate reasonably well in this environment, because, you know, to a large extent, really all we're doing is taking a person's words, typing them out, and then putting them together in some coherent form. We're not really writing too much of it ourselves. It's more just helping them to use their words and reflect their words in print. So I think almost anyone can do it. The real essential skill, I think, is the ability just to listen and listen deeply.
Yeah.
And be patient and perhaps if you've got some skills in asking the sorts of questions that bring out the story, then that's pretty useful as well. But these are things that generally we covered in training as well. So if you don't have the skills but you feel like you'd be interested in doing it, my advice would be get in touch with EPC and see if you can become a volunteer and go through the training program.
Well, that's good to know, and for our listeners as well, because we've heard you this week talk about biography. We've had another volunteer talk about palliative pause, another one talk about transport, and we've got another volunteer again next week, I think, talking about administration. And EPC have volunteer positions in all those, as well as smile makers, which is photography, hug makers, which is to do with making blankets and scarves and things. And there's lots of different roles to suit different people's abilities and expertise available at EPC. And if the listener does want to know more, the website is epc.asn.au. And of course, they'll be most happy to hear from members of the community who might want to think about taking up a volunteer role at EPC. So thank you very much, Steve. It's been fascinating. I've never done anything quite like that with biography writing. And I think it's a very special and important role that you have. Thank you again, Steve.
My pleasure. Thanks, mate.